Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 4:53 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 13th. And I'd like to thank a number of subscribers for letting me know that the audio did not transfer correctly the first time I recorded it, so this is a replacement audio and video for today. And I thought I would start off by talking about the Dow Jones the Dow Jones transportation and industrial indices and talk a little bit about Dow theory, because these indices are both making new highs. The transportation index broke out just this week, and it's spent 2.5 years already ranging below that psychological 10,000 level, so it may not offer more than token resistance on this occasion. And when we look at this index, it is exhibiting relative strength. Then it's also worth looking at the Dow Jones, and the industrials index has been exhibiting even greater relative strength, and that's particularly relative to the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq 100. So it has broken up and out of its range and has been improving upon that performance over the last few days. But we can see that, for example, while it ranged between March and May, the S&P was going up. When the S&P started ranging, the Dow Jones took over and has been advancing through most of June and moved on to a new closing high in here today. So the S&P 500 is currently at just trading below that 2450 level, and it has been up in a robust manner so far this week. When we look at it on this weekly chart, you can see that there is a very clear staircase step sequence uptrend since at least the right after the US presidential election result, and it is pushing back up towards this to the upper side of its range right now, and a clear downward dynamic would be required to question that it isn't going to break on the upside. The Nasdaq 100 is back testing its short-term, and I do stress short-term, progression of lower rally highs. It's right there in the region of 5,800, and if it can sustain a move above that level, then we will have a fairly robust argument that this consolidation is over as well. But the fact that the Nasdaq is now underperforming, whereas it has been outperforming for really a very significant period already, and particularly when we look at that weekly chart, the Nasdaq's outperformance is really quite clear, and most particularly since the middle of last year. This is a somewhat larger reaction than we have seen this year. It's the only thing that's comparable to it is the size of the reaction that we saw at the end of last year, and that reaction lasted over 4 months. So what happens next, and the extent to which the Nasdaq can continue to rally from here, is going to be rather key. It has unwound about 50% of its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. This is still a very powerful uptrend, and until it has completely unwound that move, we can't really conclude with confidence that the reaction is over. The only other way that we could conclude that is that if it were moving to new highs and pushing through the 6,000 level. But the odds are in favor of additional upside, that if we ask very simple questions, and is this a consistent trend? Absolutely. What are the consistency characteristics? It's a staircase step sequence uptrend, which is about the most consistent and easiest chart pattern to analyze. And is there any sign of type 1, 2, or 3 trend endings? And the answer is no. If that's the case, then this is a consistent trend, and a consistent trend is a trend in motion, which means that ranges should be followed by emphatic breakouts. That we're not really seeing any evidence either of failed upside breaks, which would be an indication that there's a surfeit of supply above the market. So this is still a rather benign environment. And in addition to that, particularly Asia, which is the globe's growth engine, we're seeing an increasing number of markets breaking on the upside. The Nifty has been up again in a robust manner this week and is really closing in on that psychological 10,000 level on the Nifty. And the Sensex has broken clearly above that 30,000 level, and there isn't any real there isn't a meaningful big psychological level above it right now. What is interesting is that the 10-year government bond yield is yielding approximately 6.45%, and that yield is contracting. But the repo rate is 6.25%. So this is a very flat yield curve. And what that suggests is that the RBI has been really quite tight on monetary policy, and inflation measures are coming in at really, if it's not an historic low, it's pretty close to an historic low level for inflation, considering that India's target inflation rate is around 4%, and currently it's close to 1.5%. So there is ample potential for the RBI to lower interest rates. And that then, I think, really that opens up the question about what's going to happen next with the rupee. Because on the one hand, if the RBI cuts interest rates, you're not going to have the same yield. But if that is a source of, or at least if that is a catalyst for additional economic growth in India, then that would result in more investors becoming interested. And then if we just set all of that aside and look at the chart pattern, and there was a clear progression of lower rally highs all the way through from 2014 until the beginning of this year, and then it broke upwards, and now we're getting a first step above the base. And this is the first time since 2014 that the rupee has traded above its 200-day moving average, and on previous occasions, and we can say that is true since 2011, every time it has sustained a move above the trend mean, it has not held for any meaningful period of time, and it has come crashing back down again. But on this occasion, it has spent most of this year already trading above its trend mean. This looks quite different. On the chart, it looks clearly different to the kind of trading that we've had in the rupee for much of the last decade, and would suggest that there is the potential for both currency market and capital market appreciation in India. And even if interest rates come down, a yield on a bond that where the currency is appreciating and one is getting almost 6.5% on a 10-year, that's attractive. So then you have the potential for foreign investors to pick up a return both in yield and currency, and then on the capital markets as well. So these are really quite favorable points for India. And because the interest rate is so high, then India has to stand out as one of those places that is hard to compare with, because interest rates are simply not that high with the same benign background in most other emerging markets. But that's not to say that other markets aren't breaking on the upside. The Taiwanese market has cleared 10,000, and it is improving upon that performance. Then when we look at, for example, Korea, that is also breaking on the upside. And when we see an increasing number of global markets breaking on the upside and running, and that we are seeing not just one market, but we're seeing commonality right across a whole spectrum of global markets where they are breaking on the upside, how could we but conclude that this is a strongly bullish environment? What we can say is that we've been in a process of mean reversion for the last couple of months. And while there are still overextensions that could be unwound on, particularly on high momentum shares in the technology sector, the reality is that we've had a pullback for 2 months, and now we're seeing an increasing number of markets either firming or pushing new highs. So that would suggest that we are back on in a risk-on environment, and most particularly since yesterday, when Janet Yellen made her comments, which were broadly deemed to be dovish. And that's against a background where central banks have been rather hawkish over the last few weeks. Then I think it is also worth having a look at the bond markets. US Treasuries were a bit firmer yesterday and gave it all up today, and they're a little bit softer in after hours trading. The most important thing that has happened in this market is there was a failed downside break in March, and it went right back up and tested the upper side of the range around 155, and then came down again, broke above 155 in late June, wasn't able to hold it, and came straight back down again. So, in the absence of a very clear upward dynamic, and we haven't had one yet, the last big upward dynamic that was on the breakout before that, it would have been right in the middle of May. But in the absence of a move to a similar magnitude, then I think the most likely scenario is that we're going to be coming back down towards the lower side of the range, and that's about another 5 points below where yields are right now. But that's really short term in terms of what's likely to happen with the market. I think it's much more important to have a grasp of where are we in this broad cycle. Because US 10-year Treasury yields have been going sideways since 2011, and that range is between about 1.5% and 3%, so 100% from trough to peak. And the yield is currently almost right in the middle of that. And what happens next, whether the 10-year can sustain a move above 2.4% or not, that's going to dictate whether this yield goes from the middle to the upper side or the middle to the lower side of this range over the next 6 months. What we can say about the Fed's policy is that it's unlikely that they're going to be raising rates in any kind of an aggressive manner if they're also shrinking the size of the balance sheet. It looks increasingly likely that they really do want to experiment with reducing the size of the balance sheet. But if they're going to do that, then it's unlikely that they're going to be raising rates in as an aggressive, even, and I think it's an exaggeration to call the pace with which they've been raising rates aggressive so far, but it could be even slower than that if they're also shrinking the size of the balance sheet. The fact that interest rates are going to remain low, that's really quite favorable for equities. But from the perspective of bonds, if the Fed is no longer going to be reinvesting of the full proceeds of its maturing debt, then the potential is that this is not going to be great news for the bond market because it removes a source of demand from the market. And if you're removing a source of demand, then either the remaining demand has to muster the wherewithal to fill in the gap and continue to buy them up, or prices come down. That means the yield would go up to attract more investors into this market. So that is where the risk is, that we are going to see the 2.4% level taken out on the upside, and that yields will rally towards 3%. And 3% is a bit of a psychological Rubicon, because what we have seen, for example, is that, and I posted a number of yield charts in Comment of the Day yesterday, where we've seen that dividend aristocrat type companies, they tend to rally when their yields get to about 3.5%. And that seems to be a psychological Rubicon for yield investors in equities. And then when you talk about the bond market, we've seen that over the last 6 years that the yield has come back from 3% on a number of occasions. And there are very vociferous arguments on both sides of the both bullish and bearish out there, and some very high profile people making very big forecasts. And the most important thing that we can do is look at the charts, that they tell us what the reality is. And I'm constantly rem I remember that from the chart seminar that there are three things you can see on a chart. There are what you want to see, and what you think you're going to see. And when you've got such big name, high profile, very media savvy people making very big prognostications, then you can see what you think you're going to see. And the most important thing is that we look at it and address it from just with filter questions. What are the consistency characteristics? And what and if there are, have any of them changed? And how is that? How are we in a major bull or bear market? Is it trending or ranging? If it's ranging, is it inert or volatile? So these are all questions that we can ask in an objective manner. but I do suspect that the fact that yields have been going sideways for 6 years already represents a base, and that it would require some meaningful deflation to see yields go to fresh lows. Then, when we look at the precious metal markets, gold prices were pretty much unchanged. They are continuing to hold here above the $1,200 area, but they have not been able to muster the wherewithal to break the progression of lower rally highs. Silver, having been strong over the last 3 days, was a bit softer, and it is down a bit in after hours trading. Platinum was also down a bit and is continuing to hold this $900 area, but that level really does have to hold. When we look at that on the weekly chart, $900 has represented support over much of the last year, but it did test the $800 level at the beginning of 2016, and a break below 900 would certainly open up the potential for additional downside. So it is all to play for in the precious metal markets right now, and it really is for the bulls to prove that they have the wherewithal to see prices moving higher from here. I also wanted to talk a little bit about Brazil. There was news today that Lula da Silva, far from being able to reinvigorate his political career, is now being implicated in this corruption scandal that has just embroiled just about every politician in the country. But it was received as good news by the stock market, and of course this is nominal terms, but the Bovespa is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. It has spent much of the last decade ranging below 70,000, and so far that 70,000 area has held. But it's looking increasingly likely that it is at least going to go back up and test that peak. And we should also look at the real, because it strengthened up as well in here today. So that was an indication that it wasn't just domestic buyers, but it was foreign buyers were buying both the currency and the stock market. The dollar has held a progression of lower rally highs against the real for much of the last year and a half, and it's still intact. So it's looking increasingly likely that it will at least go back down and test that 3 real to the dollar level. I think the negotiations between the UK and both within the UK and outside the UK are getting increasingly acrimonious, and that is contributing to this volatility on the euro pound rate. The euro broke out on Monday, and then it came down yesterday, and it came down again in here today. So it's looking increasingly like a failed upside break, and that helps to highlight that the UK economy is not as weak as everyone tempted to make out, but the EU economy is outperforming. Part of the reason it's outperforming is that the ECB has printed 2.2, 2.3 trillion euros over the last few years to try and support the economy. So that economic growth has been really quite expensively bought, but nonetheless, it has been bought. That is contributing to the stock market in Europe beginning to shape up once more. This is the Euro Stoxx Index, and I'm showing it on the long-term chart because it has underperformed by a substantial margin. But it is now consolidating in the region of that 2015 peak, and it has bounced and having unwound more than half of its overextension relative to the trend mean, and I suspect that it is not too ambitious to think that it is going to take out the 400-point level over the next few months if stock markets continue to firm and we see an increasing number breaking out. But I think it is worth highlighting that was the Euro Stoxx Index, which is about 330 shares, and this is the Europe Stoxx Index, which has a much heavier weighting of the UK. It also has Switzerland, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, and that has outperformed by a considerable margin. It is now testing this 400 level. It has failed to surmount 400 since the year 2000, so it's a 17-year range. The FTSE 100 has already broken upwards. And it's looking increasingly likely that, considering that pretty much every one of the shares in the FTSE 100 is also in the Europe stocks, that it represents a lead indicator for the wider index. So I think that we are still in a benign environment. There is going to be a lot of there is still a lot of things to worry about, and they say that a bull market climbs a wall of worry. Perhaps the more important point is that once it has climbed the wall of worry, there's no more worry left. So when people stop worrying, that's when we need to become really quite worried ourselves. And there isn't really any great deal of evidence that there is a lot of foam in this market, that people are completely without worry. So that would suggest that there is ample potential for additional upside in stock markets, that the things that we have to watch for are surging bond yields or surging energy prices, but we don't have that today. So that would suggest that the environment is quite benign. And of course, because we're getting this commonality in global stock markets, an increasing number of ASEAN markets and Asian markets breaking on the upside, well then that also suggests that we are in the latter stages of what has already been a very impressive advance, that this is no longer early, that their valuations are no longer cheap, but the argument is just how expensive are they? So that would suggest, and we already have evidence, that the banking sector and the resources sector and the technology sector are leading, and these are cyclical sectors. They tend to do better in the latter stages of bull markets, and that is exactly what is happening. So we know that this is not early. We know that we are probably in the latter stages of the acceptance stage from the psychological perception stages of the major bull and bear markets, and we will be remain constantly vigilant for any signs of euphoria. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I apologize for the problems with recording earlier, and I wish all the best to all of you.